Hey, Lulu here. Whether we are romping through science, music, politics, technology, or feelings, we seek to leave you seeing the world anew. Radiolab adventures right on the edge of what we think we know, wherever you get podcasts.
Thank you.
How many of you? 13.
That was the first audio and video the world was able to hear of the youth soccer team trapped in a cave in northern Thailand.
We are coming. Many people come.
This is The Takeaway. I'm Tanzina Vega, and today, a story that has the world watching. This weekend, dramatic and intense rescue operations began in Thailand's Chiang Rai province to free a group of 12 boys and their soccer coach, who've been trapped in a cave for more than 2 weeks. So far, 8 children have been rescued. 4 remain, along with their coach. The team was exploring the cave when monsoon rains flooded in, and it was 9 days before their exact location was pinpointed. On Friday, a Thai rescue diver died when he ran out of air while underwater. Petty Officer Saman Gunan had delivered oxygen to those trapped in the cave, but on his way back, through the long and complex cave tunnels, he ran out of oxygen for himself and lost consciousness. To get a sense of how these rescue operations happen and what makes them so tricky, we turn to Greg Moore, who's the Northeastern Regional Coordinator for the National Cave Rescue Commission. Greg, thanks for joining us.
Oh, thank you for having me here.
From what you've been seeing so far, can you give us a sense of the operations that are taking place?
I will start with saying it is probably the largest operation I've seen in any cave rescue because of the complexity and number of people that they are working on rescuing. Typically, in a situation like this, they will have what here in the United States we call an incident command, where they'll have a base of people who are experts that are making the decisions, gathering all the data, and then dividing into various teams, such as, you know, team to pump out the water, a team making medical decisions, and of course, the teams going in to find, evaluate, and help take the boys and the coach out.
Now, I've seen, you know, there's been lots of talk about what it takes to do this, and I want to get into the specifics of how this rescue is happening. But I also wonder if you could help our listeners understand what exactly the depth of this cave is. Do you know any of those details in terms of how far? I'm hearing it takes 2 or 3 hours to bring a child out.
Yeah, I don't know the exact numbers. I've seen 2 kilometers, which I know most listeners are probably thinking, oh, you know, that's not too far of a walk. You know, I could do that pretty quickly. But what people do have to understand is, first of all, even in the dry passages, they can be tight and narrow, which means possibly crawling or moving in a, you know, not easy walking fashion. And then, of course, in this particular cave, they have the huge complication of water-filled passages, which for an experienced cave diver definitely can take some time. And now when you're taking boys who literally this will be their first dive of their lives, they're taking their time moving very slowly because they don't want to make any mistakes.
So let's explain the process, the mechanics of getting these children out of the cave, and of course the coach as well. We're already in process. There have been a number of these children who have already been rescued. What exactly are the cavers doing? When you confront a situation like this, what do you do? What is the first step to actually rescuing people out?
Well, and I'm going to talk mostly of my experience, which is all dry caving, but the hardest part in some cases they've done here, which literally was finding the boys. As you may recall, for nearly 2 weeks, there was a question of where they were and if they could even find them. So when we do an operation, oftentimes, you know, we start out with a search party to find the folks that we're looking for. Once we find them, the next step is generally a medical evaluation. What state are they in? Can they move under their own power? Do they need medical attention? Obviously, in this case, they'd been, I believe, 9 days without food, which definitely means you have to react in a different way. You have to build up their diet. You can't just feed them food right away because their stomachs can't quite handle that. And then after that, you go into a period of planning. A lot of people I know, and I'm as a parent, I'd be one of them, want the children out as quickly as possible. They want to see their loved ones, and I can't blame them. But in a situation like this, you do want to take your time because you want to plan for every possibility. The other huge factor here, and one that I don't think can be overemphasized, is the psychological considerations. For example, you know, if the boys have a leader of the team or something like that, having that leader go first may be a real benefit for them, because they can say, hey, if they do it, I can do it. Or conversely, you may want the leader to stay behind in order to boost the morale and cheer up the boys who may be a little more scared or a little more worried about the extraction.
You mentioned psychology, and as I'm listening to this story, I'm having panic about the claustrophobia that I imagine this must feel like. And then we're seeing reports of, you know, Elon Musk is talking about putting each of the children into a tube and pulling them out. What do you do about the claustrophobia? What if there is someone who is absolutely in a panic, who cannot handle the trip out?
Sure. I will say, and it surprises some people that know I'm a caver, I've been in a couple tight passages myself where all of a sudden, you know, you get that tightness of chest or whatever. And so I know the feeling. And in one case, I remember just turning to my friend and saying, hey, tell me where you grew up, and just listen to them talk for a few minutes, which calmed me down and made me more comfortable. And then I was able to move just fine. In this case, you know, you're going to do a lot of talking to the boys. You're going to assure them as much as possible. I have seen some people suggest the use of drugs of some sort. I'm not an expert on that. I have spoken to one or two of my medical trained folks who are doctors and cavers. They're dubious of that because there are other side effects, can decrease respiration or other issues. So the doctors on the scene will make that evaluation of whether or not they want to use some sort of anti-anxiety drug or something like that. But generally, the best thing I found is simple, slow, calm talking and reassurance.
Now, what exactly is how are they getting each of these children out? Are they putting diving equipment on them and having them come out? Because we've already seen one diver who's lost his life trying to rescue these kids.
Yeah, and that was a very tragic circumstance, and one that many of us familiar with cave rescue, especially water rescue, had worried about. But most likely they're using full face masks with the boys, so they don't have to worry about holding a regulator in their mouth like a normal diver. And then most likely they have at least one, well, they definitely have one, and most likely have two divers with them, either side by side or one in front and one in back, depending on the side of the passage. There is reportedly one very tight passage there where most likely they have one diver go first, probably turn around and help guide the boy through that while the other second diver is behind the boy. So in that, no case would the boys be left alone or even out of sight of any of the divers. And given the murkiness of the water, most likely the divers are also always in complete physical contact with the boys, partly to give them reassurance and partly to help guide them. Also in situations like this, cave divers will run a line, and the line is used to help them guide which direction they're headed in, because again, the water is so murky, you can't really, even with lights, it's like trying to look through chocolate milk. So they use the guideline to help guide them through the passage.
And just generally speaking, I mean, I'm sure many of us, this was obviously an accident for this team, but are there precautions that people can take who are interested in exploring caves so they can avoid finding themselves in a similar situation?
Definitely, Tenzin, and thank you for asking. I think that's a great question. One thing I've been trying to reassure folks is that, you know, caving really is an extremely safe activity. In fact, yesterday I took some time out myself to go caving with some friends. And what we try to teach beginners is, first of all, go with people. Don't go by yourself. Having more people does mean safety if something goes wrong. And very importantly, let people know where you're going, not just the cave, but where in that cave that you're going. You know, some caves can have multiple passages. So if something happens and you don't come back in time, the people know, hey, they said they were going up passage X, let's look in passage X. Additionally, what we recommend everybody is to carry at least three different lights, two headlamps and maybe a flashlight. That way, if you know the batteries die or you drop one, you've got additional light, because obviously, you know, caves are 100% dark. People, you know, see them in movies and there's always a little bit of light, but trust me, when the lights go out, there it is dark. And finally, proper clothing. They were very fortunate here in Thailand that the average temperature of these caves, as I understand it, is in the 70s to 80s Fahrenheit. Here in New York, for example, where I cave mostly, our caves are about 40 to 50 degrees. So we recommend people wear proper clothing and definitely to wear helmets at all times.
Greg Moore with the National Cave Rescue Commission, and we'll have more on this story as it develops. Thanks, Greg.
Thank you, Tanzina.